Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Paris Olympics are over. The PGA Tour's postseason is upon us. Rex, you just got home from, I believe it's 5 weeks away from the Scottish Open, the Open Championship, week in between, and then 2 weeks for the Paris Olympics fortnight. First question, how was your sleep the very first night back in your own bed?
Bonjour and bienvenue is what I wanted to tell you. Hello and welcome. Last night wasn't bad. The flight was got in late, like 8:30. Didn't get home until like 9:30. Hugged Tito a little bit, said hello to the family, went to bed. I woke up. There was a disturbing moment about 3 a.m. when I thought, oh boy, here it comes. But I was able to go back to sleep. I think we've talked about this on the podcast. I was scheduled to have knee surgery this morning, but instead the surgeon decided it was just going to be a steroid shot. So we'll see how that works out. Anywho, that was more what I was worried about, because what I didn't want to do is spend this whole first day laying on the couch, because I knew that was going to throw me for a loop. So now I can go outside. I can work in my yard that hasn't been worked on in 5 weeks and get some sunshine.
A couple things here. Sure. First of all, this has been the easiest transition for me when I was abroad and then came back to Florida. I had virtually no layover, no lag, like
none. It was,
I felt perfectly fine. Like, wow. The best experience I've ever had at the age of 37, which is a little bit shocking. Are you at all worried, because you've been on at least a 5 hour time difference, six for the past 2 weeks? Are you at least a little bit worried about what tonight could bring, what the rest of the week could bring? Are you supposed to do live television the rest of the week?
No. Luckily, I have the week off. Thank you, Russ, for giving me the week off. I am worried, yes, to answer your question, because you're right. This 5 weeks, I think it just gets more ingrained in you. And my wife got back 2 weeks ago, and she is still struggling with it a little bit. And I think it just gets harder as you get older. So now as an old person, I think I'm going to be impacted even worse. That said, I slept like a baby last night. And so I think it's kind of like what we do when we fly over. This is a bit of a hack for those who fly to the UK. The best thing you can possibly do is get off the plane and go straight to a golf course and play golf until dark and then have some pints and then pass out. Because that gets you almost immediately on that rhythm, that clock. Like, you're going to struggle a little bit throughout the week, but that really locks you in. Coming back, you don't always have that, because I did do this yesterday. So it was a 9.5 hour flight. And I actually took a 2 hour nap and set an alarm. So I was like, I can't allow myself, because I was really tired. It's been a long 5 weeks. And I was looking forward to just laying on my back and watching what was left of the Olympics and watching the closing ceremonies and sleeping. But I knew if I would have slept for 9 hours yesterday, it would have been a rough night last night. So I think I probably helped myself. I'll let you know on Sunday or on Wednesday.
Shout out ultra strength, extra strength melatonin, which to me was a savior. I'm always a little bit skeptical about melatonin. I've never had great results. Extra strength, though, boop, 15 minutes, you are out like a light and sleeping rather peacefully. The second part of this is the knee surgery. So you tore your meniscus, not playing pickleball, but while reaching for a pickleball while playing pickleball. You went into Monday morning into the doctor's office believing you were about to go under the knife, and all they gave you was a shot?
So I have one doctor at this place I go to in Orlando, and I've been working with him since April, and I've had to tell that story that I was on a pickleball court and I was in the act of or adjacent playing pickleball, but that's not how I hurt myself. I hurt myself just bending over, picking up a ball that had bounced over from another court. So I've had to say that story more times than I'm comfortable with, because it doesn't make me look very good. It doesn't really paint me in an athletic picture. So I had to do it again today, because I had a video conference with my doctor. I think he was sitting next to me at the Open Championship, and it's still hurting. I'm going through a lot of rehab and therapy, and it's not helping. So finally he was like, all right, let's do surgery on it. I can clean it up and the pain will go away and you'll walk out of surgery the whole nine yards. So that's what was supposed to happen today, but it was a different doctor, a different surgeon. And he came in after looking at my MRI and he said, it seemed really aggressive for the tear that I have, because it's not what they call a lap tear, which gets into the actual joint. And so he said he wants to do a steroid shot and give it 6 weeks. If it's still hurting, then he'll cut me open. So the Tuesday after the President's Cup at Royal Montreal, we may be right back at square one.
Wow. Just seems like they're kicking the can
on
this way, when you could have had surgery many months ago and been full flight playing pickleball. Sure. Once again, I cannot wait to read the comments on this podcast recording, because there's nothing hate more than when we go 5 minutes about our personal lives. Stay tuned. There's more to happen on the back end of this podcast. I did want to touch, Rex, on the women's competition that you covered at the Olympics. I think it was just sort of with the men, with the sort of capstone for Scottie Scheffler's incredible year, taking home the gold medal. This was, I believe, the best case scenario for the women's competition as well. Lydia Ko, who completed the Olympic slam, had a bronze, had a silver, and now has a gold medal. It earned her the 27th and final point needed for induction into the LPGA Hall of Fame, which has sort of been dogging her over the past couple of years. What was your sort of biggest takeaway from the women's competition, seeing how it unfolded on Saturday, which I thought, again, was a pretty frenetic final round with a lot of different possibilities?
Yeah, I mean, it was very exciting. I mean, I would compare it to the men the week before. You had everything going on with Scottie Scheffler shooting a 62 to take the gold medal. You had Victor Perez firing up the home crowd. France was all around him. It was almost the exact same scenario. The only difference was, instead of Nelly Korda doing what Scottie Scheffler did, you had Lydia Ko. I am taken by, in those who watched the final round would have probably seen a golf course that played more difficult for the women. To be fair, the conditions were just more difficult. They didn't get the rain. They got a lot more wind. The golf course dried out. It got firm and fast, and it just became a more demanding golf course. To be fair, there was not a 62 out there on Saturday for someone to come and chase down Lydia, but it was the exact same scenario. You had Jon Rahm, who was up to four strokes, I think, with eight holes to play on Sunday during the men's competition. And when Jon Rahm is in full flight like that, we kind of written it off. Okay, well, that's the gold medal. Now we're playing for the other two to try to figure it out. And Jon Rahm ended up playing himself completely off the podium. It was such a similar scenario. I think Lydia Ko at one point, as she made the turn, was five shots up. And then she makes a double bogey, I think, on 13. And suddenly she's grinding for pars. And she's having to make these really tricky sort of white knuckly type putts just to make pars coming down the stretch. And I kept thinking that as much as this means to her, and she had embraced all of it, which I thought was the coolest part of this. She was there on Saturday and Sunday for the men, and I interviewed her for the telecast on Saturday, and she's the first one that brought it up to me. Like, I know what's on the line here. Like, winning the gold gives me all three. Like, that's a pretty cool accomplishment. I don't care what sport you play. That's a really, really cool accomplishment.
That's not gonna be matched in golf.
I don't think it will be.
Complete sweep.
Yeah. And plus, you're talking about a 12-year window is the other part of this. Like, it's not like something you can really kick off quickly. And most great careers don't last 12 years, to be quite frank, at least on the PGA Tour. And so you have that going with her. You get that final point to get her in the LPGA Hall of Fame, which is a different side note. It's a ridiculous Hall of Fame. If Lydia Ko wasn't already in, to me is the part that I sort of stumbled over. But all right, we'll play by your rules and we'll do your silly math. And to do that, and to just embrace all of it, it's not as though she hid from it. And look, you and I interview plenty of players that are trying to do something historic. And 9 times out of 10, they'll just want to duck and hide and go into a closet and pretend like, la, 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 I can't hear you. I'm not going to pay attention to this. I want to stick with the process. Totally understand that. Like, that's the way elite athletes work. In this particular case, she chose, you know what? I want this. Like, I'm not going to lie. I know what's at stake. And she was, you know, pretty long term about it. When she looked at it, she goes, look, I'll get that point. I really feel like I'll get that final point eventually, whether it's this week or if it's at the Open Championship at St. Andrews or if it's at Scottish Women's Open or wherever the case may be, I'll eventually get that point, but I'm never going to have an opportunity. Like, she was really clear. Like, I'm not playing in 2028 in LA. And so this is going to be my only window to sort of complete that podium slam, which I coined, by the way, and actually
trademark.
Brandon Chamblee liked that. So actually, I am going to get a trademark on that. And it's hard. I go back to years ago asking Tiger Woods, you know, what do you think the greatest accomplishment in your career is? Thinking he would say the Tiger Slam or, you know, winning the Open by 15 shots or whatever the case may be, winning the Masters by 12 shots. Like, I was curious what he was going to say. And he thought about it and he goes, winning the three consecutive U.S. juniors. I was like, what? And he goes, because I only had 3 years to do it. I had a very finite window. Like, if I'm going to win three straight, I got to win all three of these. And it was the exact same idea with Lydia, where, you know, someone who's really, really young could probably set that as a goal. But man, that's really tough to pull off.
What are your impressions of Lydia Ko? I know you do not cover the LPGA full time, but you have covered each of her two previous Olympic competitions, 2016 in Rio and then 2021 in Tokyo. To me, at least on the outside, this is a 27-year-old who I'm not sure, certainly in the golf world, you can find an athlete who is more universally beloved than Lydia Ko, a player who has been in the spotlight since he was 15 or 16 years old, winning on the LPGA, and now is a fully formed adult, seems well-adjusted at this stage. And there has been a lot of talk now following this gold medal, Rex, that she could hang it up at the end of the season, She's gotten into the Hall of Fame. She has other things she wants to pursue. She was recently married. That's not going to at least be the case. It's not just going to be a mic drop here. She is going to play the Scottish Open and then the Women's British Open after that. But certainly at the end of 2024, I think she's probably going to have a decision to make. But from your experiences, the interactions you've had with her, what has sort of stuck with you about Lydia Ko, the competitor, the person, and sort of the legacy she's going to leave in this game?
Well, to go back to the idea, I had some producers on Saturday who wanted me to press her for the idea because she had hinted to the fact that she doesn't want to play past 30 years old. She's 27 years old right now. And as you pointed out, like, this checks all the boxes. There's not a whole lot left for her to accomplish. So I did. And the fact that, I don't know if you saw the interview I did with her, but the fact I pressed in that situation when she's coming off the podium with a gold medal hanging around her neck shows you how comfortable, how easy it is to be comfortable around her. She's open. She doesn't hide anything. As much as I enjoy interviewing Scottie Scheffler, like, there's boundaries when it comes to, there's certain things that if you're going to ask, you're going to get a bad answer when it comes to Scottie. That's not the case with Lydia Ko. And me and our colleague, Doug Ferguson, AP golf writer, longtime AP golf writer, he and I sort of have an annual tradition at Tiger's event in the Bahamas where I sit down and I start doing the ballot for the GWA various awards, players of the year and all. And there is one that we give out, you're well aware of this, called the Bartlett Award. And we give this to the player that's most media friendly, for lack of a better term. And every year, by clockwork on Tuesday afternoon, Fergie and I will sit down and we'll start arguing about who should get the Bartlett Award. And in previous years, I have pushed for Rory McIlroy. I am not going to do that this year because Rory had
I'm not sure he's going to win that one.
Rory had a tough year with the media, which we'll touch on as we get further down the year. I'm going to press for Lydia. And look, I think it's still too early at 27, even if she is sort of going to start winding down. What she told me in that interview on Saturday afternoon was she still has plenty she wants to accomplish. She's never won a Women's British Open. She's never won a Women's Scottish Open. Like, there's plenty of things still on her radar that she wants to accomplish. So I didn't get the impression she was walking out of Paris as a swan song. Would have been a really cool one, but I didn't get that impression at all. But covering her, full disclosure, this was my fourth LPGA event in my career, and roughly call this an LPGA event. Three Olympics, and I covered Q School the year Michelle Wee won. So I am not versed on that side. There's people who are much, much more qualified to interview these accomplished women, much more so than I am. She is a delight to work with. And for her to pull off what she did in that scenario, journalistically, you and I don't root for the player. We root for the story. I was rooting for the story.
Yeah. I mean, you can't find a crustier group of people than golf writers. And there has been like just resounding support and enthusiasm for Lydia Ko, the person, Lydia Ko, the competitor. It does feel like her competitive days are dwindling at this point, which I think is a shame. Mm-hmm. Just 27 years old, still is in very good form. But I feel like we should enjoy her while we can, because I'm sure whatever Lydia Ko's second chapter will bring, it's probably going to be pretty good as well. All right, Rex, let's transition to the Wyndham Championship and what actually turned out to be a very wild ending. For about 3.5 hours, this was an absolute snooze. You had rookie Max Greisterman with a four-shot lead with 5 holes to play. You thought it may be like a John Rahm situation where it's just a Sunday snoozer. Instead, Max Greisterman ends up losing by 2 shots. That would have been the big story because that would have been the third biggest choke, collapse, whatever you want to call it, over the past 7 weeks, whether it was Rory McIlroy at the U.S. Open, then Rahm at the Olympics. That would have been the big story on this Sunday if not for Matt Kuchar's bizarre decision to be the one and only player who marked his ball and returned 8 a.m. on Monday morning. Again, he was not in contention. The tournament was effectively over. Aaron Rye had won the golf tournament. He posed with photos. He posed for photos. He had the trophy. He's already moving on to Memphis and the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup playoff opener. What was your read on what was an absolutely bizarre situation, one in which Trevor Immelman, Jim Nance, Brian O'Shambly, all of them had never seen before in the golf world?
I didn't know what was happening because, I was flying home yesterday afternoon, so I didn't get a whole lot. I was just kind of catching bits and pieces of it as I scrambled to Atlanta Airport. And it wasn't until I opened up the final round notes. And like, you know, every Sunday night I'll open up and just start scrolling them. And at the very top, it was one player, Matt Kuchar, has not finished. But then they were Aaron Rye is the champion. And so in my mind, I'm trying to figure out, like, why in the world, like, you're just going to putt out even if it's midnight. Like, I don't want to come back here tomorrow. I don't understand what the message was he was trying to send either to tournament officials or to whoever else. Like, it's such a weird flex to decide, you know what? No, I'm going to spend the night here and come back tomorrow morning. I don't get that.
I don't get it either. I thought he may have been trying to prove a point about the pace of play and how the final group had about roughly 5 hours and 10 minutes in order to get a three ball around before Dark was going to send on Sedgefield Country Club. And they were able to get it in. Matt Kuchar thought that they should have called play after the 16th hole. If you remember, Max Greisserman four-putted that green, missed twice inside 3 feet on that green to effectively lose the golf tournament. That was not the reason. That was not the reason why Matt Kuchar decided he was going to mark his ball and return again on Monday morning. To hear Matt Kuchar talk to reporters on Monday, he essentially said that he was trying to give Max Greisserman an out, effectively saying, I'm going to return on Monday morning. He did not think that the tournament had been effectively decided because Aaron Rye made birdie on the 72nd hole. So he was trying to give him an out, saying, hey, I'm going to return on Monday. You should do the exact same thing. If I'm going to return, you should return, because there's no way that you should hit this golf shot with the tournament still on the line. You need to come back with fresh greens in the morning, no wind. You can see, put a good swing on it, have a full range session, the works. Instead, Matt Kuchar marks, the Aaron Rye makes a birdie on the 72nd hole, and Max Greisserman said, I've got nothing to play for. I have to hold this out. I'm going to go ahead and play. Instead, Max Greisserman gets up and down for par, loses by two shots, but finishes second alone. The blowback on this one seems like a gross miscalculation on Matt Kuchar's part. It's not been the first time in his career that he has sort of been in this situation where perhaps what he thinks he's doing the right thing, and then the social media blowback is what it is. But Matt Kuchar, the explanation doesn't make any sense. The logistics that have to go into Matt Kuchar returning for 6 minutes. He played the 18th hole in 6 minutes, Rex, on Monday. But the shot link operator, the tour official, the scorecard operators, the folks who have to get the range ready, who have to cut the golf course, the pro-am that was going to be pushed back on Monday, the number of people this affects is dozens, from 50 to 100 people, just for one player who, again, was not in title contention to finish out. Is just sort of mind-blowing.
Well, and help me with the logistics here. So Max needed to hole out from the fairway on 18 to tie Aaron Rye. That was the scenario, correct?
Correct.
I'm not quite sure. Like, and I'm sure it was dark at that point because it was 8:10, 8:20, somewhere around in there, according to the notes that I read. So I'm sure it was on the darker side. But that's not a realistic chance. It's one thing if you've got a 12-footer up the hill and it's dark, that, yeah, I'm coming back tomorrow morning. I want to give this my best shot. I would have gotten that entirely. This sounds like Matt trying to find some cover that, no, I was trying to help him. This had nothing to do with me. This had nothing to do with me trying to prove a point. I was trying to help Max. I'm not sure I'm buying that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he tried to give him an out, and then Max Greisserman decided not to take it. Matt Kuchar's logic was essentially, if you can hit the tee shot, go ahead and hit the tee shot. If you can hit the approach, okay, maybe you go ahead and hit the approach. But if you have a putt in near darkness, that is one that you're going to want to return on Monday morning, fresh greens, broad daylight. Like, that gives yourself the best opportunity to do it. I completely understand that. It just seems like a gross miscalculation that did have some ramifications for Matt Kuchar. I know you did not see Max Greisserman's press conference afterward, though, Rex. I could not have been more impressed with how this 29-year-old rookie handled the situation. Again, he was four shots ahead with five holes to play, got very unlucky on the 14th hole, hitting the car path, going out of bounds. There was definitely some miscalculations on Max Greisserman's part as well. There's no way that you can miss right in that circumstance. There is no way with his fourth shot he should have laid up in the cross bunkers, which involved making him making a quad in this situation. Did not blame anything. Did not blame darkness for the three putt from 3 feet on the 16th green as well. There's something to be said for accountability, taking responsibility. Again, it became a story that was overshadowed because of Matt Kuchar's bizarre nature. But with Aaron Rye winning this golf tournament, I couldn't have been more impressed with the way Max sort of handled what was surely one of the most head-spinning moments of his pro career to this point.
Yeah, I mean, hitting the cart path was unlucky. You're right. I don't think he executed very well after that. So I'd be curious his mindset in that situation. And we talked about this a lot last week with the women, where pressure manifests itself in such weird ways. And sometimes that's a bad swing, and sometimes that's you just push the putt, or maybe you yip it a little bit, whatever the case may be. I think the part that gets overlooked is it sort of clouds your judgment sometimes. It's more of a mental hurdle that you need to get over sometimes than more so than it is a physical. Executing the shots is one thing, but it seems to me Max made some mental mistakes coming down the stretch that probably cost him more so than, you know, darkness or anything that Matt Kuchar might have done.
And shout out Aaron Rye as well, a player who had clearly been trending in this direction. This was a big win for the Data Boys because Aaron Rye, Rex, was actually fourth
the Data Boys
the PGA Tour in strokes gained total. If you're unfamiliar with that vernacular, that is basically a compilation of a player's entire assets, the facets of his game. Fourth best on the PGA Tour, clearly the best this year without a victory, kind of in that Colin Morikawa range as well. You look at what he has done this summer, close call at the Rocket Mortgage T2, T7 at the John Deere, T4 at the Scottish Open, and now wins the Wyndham Championship all the way inside the top 25 in the world ranking. Now has a shot to make it all the way to East Lake for the Tour Championship and change his life sort of monetarily as well. You've covered Aaron Rye this summer and talked to him a bunch. What have been your biggest takeaways from the way he has sort of evolved now into a pretty high caliber player?
My mind immediately went to when I saw the notes that Aaron had won to golf's longest day. I was in Canada for that qualifier, the 36-hole qualifier, and he needed to get up and down for eagle on the last hole, which was not an easy hole to eagle. Birdies came pretty easily, but not eagles. And like he made it look easy. He hit two perfect shots to give himself a chip up the hill, executed the chip absolutely perfectly and hold it out. And you're like, man, like when I spoke with him afterwards, you realize this meant the world to him, not just because he got in the U.S. Open. Yeah, that's very, very cool for a player of that caliber. The bigger deal was executing those shots coming down the stretch when you have to. That's the only way you ever really test yourself. You can stand on the range and do this a million times. You can even do it maybe Friday afternoon to make the cut. That's probably the closest comp here. But to do it when you absolutely have to achieve whatever that goal happens to be, I don't think you can overstate how important that is for a player of that caliber. You know, you can do it. Can you do it under pressure? And that's what he's been able to do this season. And you're right. When you look at his game, he really doesn't have any weaknesses. And he does it differently. I mean, watching him work on his game on the range and around the putting green, he clearly has sort of his own way of doing this. It's a very unique swing. It's a very unique way to approach the game. I think it's enjoyable. I think it's refreshing that he has sort of made this breakthrough. And the fact that he's made it at this time, it harkens back to what Lucas Glover did at the end of last season. It seems like we always get in this scenario where one player gets hot right at the right time. And I think he's 24th now on the points list. So that's not a lock for East Lake, but it's pretty close.
Yeah, a very tidy player, very disciplined, very methodical. I think he gets a bad rap as being a slow player. I don't think he's necessarily slow. I just think he's so focused on his routine. I mean, he does the exact same thing every single time. It's actually a good lesson for the amateurs to what you can take away from Aaron Rye. Very happy to see him get the breakthrough. And now he heads into Memphis and the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup champion, FedEx St. Jude Championship with a lot of momentum. The top 70 race, Rex, sort of was a bummer. Yeah, an absolute dud. The only player who moved into the top 70 was Victor Perez, moving from 71 to 70. That was the spot occupied by Grayson Murray. So there was actually no player at the Wyndham Championship who played his way out of the top 70 field. So that is set now for TPC Southwind and Memphis. Shout out Victor Perez, who came fourth at the Olympics. All the emotion, all the energy there. And then now plays his way to make sure he gets a full card for next season. As we look ahead now to TPC Southwind, in my opinion, this is the most important FedEx Cup event, where the top 50 after this week's tournament is going to get into signature events for 2025. Yes, everyone focuses on the FedEx Cup finale and the Tour Championship. That's essentially just making multimillionaires even richer. This one, though, Rex, can change some careers.
Yeah, and we'll talk about it when we do the, you know, the preview podcast on Wednesday afternoon. But I was on the plane with a tour executive coming home from Paris, and we were talking about Memphis and how that's really the week that matters now. I like the idea that Wyndham has become sort of a quasi playoff event, and you saw that with the field they got. And I think it was 18 players who made the trip from Paris to Wyndham for various reasons, and I think that's good for that tournament. But you have to give Memphis, you have to give FedEx the nod here, because they've created the tournament sort of out of thin air that was a playoff event, but didn't have this kind of pressure on it as we know it to be now. We know now the top 50 number is the magic number. Like getting from Memphis to the BMW is the one that counts the most. Yes, getting inside the top 70 this week was big for the likes of Victor Perez, but it is a bigger jump to move into the top 50 going into the BMW, just based on what it's going to give you next year. Like we know this, and we'll talk about it more before the year is out. But if you're inside that top 50, you can essentially write your own schedule, and you have to play so bad to play your way out of that top 50. Like it's such the magic number now, as opposed to in the past, it's been 125 or 30, and everything else has been sort of filler.
Yeah, very few players have actually fallen out of that sort of churn rate for at least the top 50, even the top 70. Like it's basically a golden parachute for a lot of these players. It's going to be a focus of my story, certainly next week, the BMW Championship, when I'm at Castle Pines. I was just looking, Rex, at what the FedEx Cup standings look like at this point and sort of projecting what these players are going to have to do to get inside the top 50. There are some big name players who, if they do miss this top 50 cutoff, we're going to have to rely on other avenues, certainly sponsor exemptions. But like, here's some of the players who are around that top 50 bubble. Adam Scott at 46. Tom Kim, sort of the darling of the Paris Olympics, at 43. Will Zalatoris coming back from the back injury at 49. Justin Rose at 55. Victor Hovland, who is number 7 in the world ranking, he'd be able to get in the signature events by virtue of his world ranking, is at 57, but the reigning FedEx Cup champion, that's certainly a surprise to see him in this position. And Jordan Spieth, number 63, heading into Memphis. Again, we will do the full preview podcast on Wednesday, but is there any player who is of keen interest to you as we start and get into Memphis week here?
I think all of those players, Jordan Spieth being the one that stands out, would fall into that category that Justin Thomas did this year, or Adam Scott, or Webb Simpson, because we saw, for maybe all the wrong reasons, time and time again, that the exemptions into those signature events seem to go to the same group, seem to go to the same type of player. Certainly Jordan Spieth is going to fall into that category. I will say he may end up being the victim of what happened this year, where he might get one, he may even get two. I don't think you'll see guys like Adam Scott did this year get 4 or 5 exemptions into these signature events, because it's just a bad message to send to the rest of the membership that, look, it doesn't matter how bad you play if you're one of the chosen few who, in Adam's defense, he has spent a lot of time on the tour policy board. He has suffered through a lot of probably painfully boring meetings, and so maybe this is a good reward for him, but that still doesn't sit well with the rank and file. And I think what you're going to end up with is, even if they don't make it official, even if the tour doesn't come up with some sort of regulation that, look, you can only get two of these things. Like they're very, very important. And if you get two, you've had your opportunities, and if you can't play your way in, that's kind of on you. Even if they don't do it officially, I think sort of unofficially tournaments will start realizing that it's just a bad look.
Yeah. For a tour that's supposed to be built on meritocracy, to get 4, 5, even 6 handouts in the tour's biggest, most lucrative, most important tournaments, based on, yes, obviously the popularity in terms of Jordan Spieth, but even your position on the PGA Tour policy board, that is certainly a tough look. Jordan Spieth, by the way, had an opportunity to move inside the top 50 this past week, the Wyndham Championship, missed the cut. He did say in his pre-tournament press conference, something we did not touch on in this podcast, that he is most likely to undergo off-season wrist surgery to address the issue that has been dogging him since May 2023. He said, look, you look at my stats, I'm driving the golf ball as well as I ever have, and sort of the bread and butter of his game, which is iron play and wedge play in particular, those have been drastically down this year, sort of at the levels we saw in 2018, 2019, when he was really in the doldrums and undergoing some swing changes. He said, look, it doesn't hurt me when I'm playing. It's sort of these off the golf course issues where it'll pop up, I have to put it back in place, and that's where I'm sort of feeling some discomfort. But subconsciously, in Jordan Spieth's mind, making contact with the ground, being as repetitive as he needs to do to sort of dial in his iron game and wedge play, that has been affecting him. I'd love to see Jordan Spieth get right, because again, his 2024 began incredibly well with Kapalua, with Phoenix, had good golf tournaments. You thought that he was going to be sort of on his way to rediscovering that form. Not to be for Jordan Spieth. Now needs a good result at TPC Southwind just to extend his season. All right, Rex, now that you are back at home, what's on the grill? Do you have any sort of golf that is planned? Because I know it has been a minute since you've been back home in Longwood.
Well, now I don't have to have the surgery. We've been kind of putting off a trip at Stream Song, which is a place that I've only been to once and really enjoyed. It's not, well, it is pretty far from my house, but it isn't technically in Central Florida. So I got the invitation to go out and play the new course that they have out there. So I'm looking forward to that. So without the surgery, I'm definitely going to do that. As far as grilling, we had this conversation the other day. I'd be curious to see what you felt. 5 weeks in Europe is a long time. I'm not going to do the cliche about talking about how bad the food is. However, what would have been the first thing you wanted to eat when you got off the plane last night?
Smash burger.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I went to Popeyes.
Oh, wow. I did not see that one coming. I did not see that one coming.
A lot of thought into it.
Fried chicken, very delicious. If you weren't getting home at 9 o'clock, I certainly could have fired up the PK and thrown a nice ribeye on there, since I'm sure you're tired of the gray meat. It is interesting that you're going to Streamsong, which is sort of the beacon of Florida golf. I actually had an opportunity, Rex, just a couple of weeks ago to play Cabot Citrus Farms, the old Worldwoods, just about an hour north of Tampa.
Cool.
I'm always a little bit skeptical with this new agey sort of golf experiences, because I feel like they're just sort of catering to young people who have money, disposable income, and they want to do all the things. This is like the prototypical modern golf getaway experience, where you have on-site cottages, you have skeet shooting, you have archery, you have fishing. Like, you're basically going to the middle of nowhere and just sort of camping out. And look, Bandon Dunes has made a killing and is now probably the premier destination in the U.S. where you're going just for golf and to hang out with your buddies. I went with a foursome and was absolutely blown away. So it's going to be a 36-hole facility. I played the Karoo, which is the new golf course there. It looks nothing like the old World Woods. The craziest greens I have ever seen in my life. Wild undulations, super fun to play, not overly long from sort of the quote unquote member tees that we played from about 6,400 yards. We had a great day, played 36 holes there. Actually shot, Rex, how about this? I shot 71 on the back half of a 36 hole day, shot 300 par on the back nine, played my tail off. I have not played like that in years. Shout out Mustard Golf, new golf app that has got my swing feeling as grooved as it has in a very long time. And Rex, the second 18-hole facility there is going to be called The Roost. It's opening in October. They've already had PGA of America officials out to this property to sort of preview it for a potential PGA championship venue, making some alterations. It's most likely going to be need to be made more difficult. That's how highly sought after this facility is going to be. I'm not sure when the next PGA championship opening is. Probably like 2057, but that kind of shows you the aspirations of what Cabot Citrus Farms has for this. It's in the middle of nowhere.
I was about to say, Brooksville. I don't think logistically that fits very well for a major championship. Certainly
it is wide open. It is wide open. There would be nothing but space. At Karoo, the golf course that I played, it'd be very difficult because of the mounding and that sort of situation. There is nothing but open space for the Roost, which again opens for preview play beginning in October. I think eventually Cabot Citrus Farms will sort of look like Pinehurst, where you have 6 to 8 golf courses on property. They have nothing but land out there. It's going to look markedly different than it does in summer 2024. Again, highest recommendation if you guys are looking for a buddy trip. They're not paying me to say this. This is not a sponsored read. I just enjoyed myself. Most certainly can't wait to get on the golf course again. Again, Cam starts kindergarten this week. Things are about to open up with some free time. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Wednesday for a full preview edition of the FedEx St. Jude Championship, the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. In the meantime, you guys are the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for our latest news, notes, and updates. We'll talk to you guys in about 48 hours. Have a great start to your work week.
Bonjour and bienvenue.